Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Today is a very special program. I will give you the usual particulars at the break or just before the break as we talk to our very special guest. Today is a special program because today we're going to be talking with a returning guest to our program, fascinating woman, and I'm really excited that not only we have her back on the program, but also the fact that she is a part of my life because she has been, I guess the best way to put it, instrumental in helping me working through some issues surrounding the imminent departure of, as you've heard me mention many times, my dog, Makushla, who passed on the 12th of October of 2018. And this is hadn't been an easy transition, but yet at the same time, it was an easy transition for her. She went so peacefully and gently and so forth. So I would highly recommend that you get in touch with her. Who am I speaking of? Well, I'm speaking of Sandra Mendelson, and she is, well, for all intents and purposes, she is a an animal channeler, and among other things. And I want to welcome you back to the program, and also thank you so much for being a part of what I've been going through, what I and my wife have been going through. You're the author also of We Walk Beside You. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Richard. It's really great to be back, and I just felt really honored that you allowed me in. You know, I needed to hear it from a horse that we all pick up different jewels along the way, and that's why we need each other. And it's really true. Your program is a really good juncture for that, for people connecting and sharing their gifts. So thank you for having me here.
You are more than welcome. And this is something that, of course, a lot of folks they're not familiar with, although they would love to be, because they've had animals who have they've had pets who have been with them for, in some cases, you know, 15, maybe 20 years. I mean, we had a cat that we calculated based upon the age that she came to us from our friend that she his name was Amos. And he died at the age of 25, as far as we could figure. Big black cat named, So, I mean, they can live to be a long, long, many, many years. They also add years to one's life. This is what statistics tell us as well. Mm-hmm. But you you have so many different other wonderful gifts. In addition to being an animal channeler and communicator, you again have written this book, a wonderful little book called We Walk Beside You, Animal Messages from an Awakening World. You're also, now this is going to be one for the ages, a certified polychromatic light therapist. I really wasn't sure I was going to get through that. And we're going to get into that as well. I want to talk about that as well. But the thing that obviously came to me when I first saw this, and maybe it came to you when you were writing this book, We Walk Beside You, and that wonderful phrase, don't walk in front of me, I may not follow, don't walk behind me, I may not lead, walk beside me and be my friend. And that's really what these wonderful creatures who come into our lives, and they choose us. That's really what they want. They want to walk beside us, whether it's a cat, a dog. It really doesn't matter. Isn't that pretty much the case? And is that sort of the impetus for this particular book?
Well, you know what? When to make a very, very long story short, I have to put this comment in because if we take away nothing from the animal kingdom, we absolutely have to remember each animal is an individual soul on a different at a different place on its growth path. So you will meet animals that act very calm and well adjusted, and you look in their eyes and you're just like, wow, that's it. That animal is present and there's so much going on behind there. And then there are animals that are just do-do-do-do-do-do. So, you know, to not judge and appreciate their uniqueness, which is every bit as powerful as ours. And the title, We Walk Beside You, to me, and you're right. You know, the animals of the world have been existing, if you will, and tolerating humans since the dawn of time. And now that we are starting to wake up, more and more people are actually saying, wait a minute, you know, yes, animals are sentient, they feel and they're compassionate. And people are starting to pay deeper attention to what animals are really showing them through their behavior, through their odd animal friendships. So yes, We Walk Beside You was a very intentional title that gave birth to that first book. Now a kid series is coming out, and there's more books for adults that are being written as we speak. There's lots of stuff.
Absolutely. And there always will be, because there's so much more to learn. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I've kind of taken the tack over the years and trying to share with people the fact that what we need to be about is we need to be about the process of truly learning about the lessons that nature can teach us, that nature is, quite honestly, the best, if you will, example of the way in which we ought to be living our lives and following those lessons. And I guess the best way to exemplify that is there is no species on the planet except for man that sets up for more than a year supplies, food,
right.
Clothing.
More than they need.
Exactly. I mean, I use the example of a squirrel. Hey, they're only storing nuts up for the season, the winter. Mm-hmm. And then Come springtime, they start all over again.
Exactly. Well, you know what? Nature is not it's not captive in the human condition. And the torturous component of the human condition is the mind. Yes, we build beautiful things with the mind, and the mind is also what causes us our greatest pain. The animals tell me it's where all distortion begins. So the more time we get out into nature and are able to, you know, you've heard it before, still the mind and realize and just experience ourselves in nature, we watch the pain melting away and the truth of what life is really about becomes obvious. But it's a challenge. Some of us suffer it more than others to step out of that constant chatterbox that, you know, regurgitates negative experiences, misinterprets things, beats us up, and limits who we are.
Yeah. And, it's interesting too to see what we've created in this world when we haven't followed nature's example. And you just look around you and you can see so much. Now, granted, you know, I live here on on the central coast of California, Santa Barbara, and have been threatened time after time after time after time with one disaster, specifically wildfire, after another. And obviously we had the mudslides of 2018 January. And it wears on you. But one of the things I've noticed as these things come about is that the animals, they come running. A matter of fact, what was it? Somebody said they were able to capture a picture or a video, actually, of the animals running from these wildfires in November of 2018 down in the Ventura, Los Angeles County areas, as well as up in Northern California in that area too. And they know to get the hell out of the way.
Well, and if they're not held captive, they would have gotten out of the way sooner because they feel what's going on with Mother Earth through their feet. Cycles of purging and rebuilding, and there are all kinds of theories about the fires that I don't want to get into, but even if the fires were set from some
lightning bolt,
something a little bit more human.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The animals know, they can feel that.
Yeah.
You know, the imbalance, there's this constant communication, this web that only humans cannot see. And animals know what's going on because they tap into the web. So if you imagine this, you've heard it called the field. It's in quote, only invisible to humans, connecting all things. That's why animals know what's coming. They feel what's coming. The birds share it with them and they take action way before we do. They have even told me that they know the weather patterns for weeks in advance.
So, well, and we've yeah. even we've even seen the examples prior to earthquakes.
Exactly.
The birds, they're flying and doing yep. this and that and the other thing, and different animal land animals are doing other things as well.
Got it.
And they're moving to get as far away from the potential mm-hmm. disaster for themselves as they possibly can. And yet mm-hmm. we've anchored in, we've hunkered down, and this is where we're going to stay. There's a great line from an Irish folk song that goes, you do not own the land owns you. And that yeah. is really, really true. Let's talk a little about this. I'm very curious because I want to jump into this now. What is polychromatic therapy, light therapy?
Okay. Again, you know, when you're moving through your life and trying different things, you never know if something is going to be a landing place for you or if it's a stepping stone to something else. And after I left corporate 20, I forgot, years ago, you know, I started by becoming a health coach because I had been studying nutrition by myself for decades. And that kind of also, at the same time, I was introduced to cold lasers for healing. Now, net-net, interestingly enough, back in the 60s, the use of lasers for healing showed up amongst veterinarians. Well, of course, everybody experiments on the animals. And they were using cold lasers to speed healing for equine injuries and stuff like that until people started lining up at their veterinarian. And the veterinarians were treating humans until they got their wrists slapped by the AMA, who said, you are not licensed to treat humans. So starting in the 60s, the use of lasers to speed healing, to bring down inflammation, speed regeneration of cellular activity, which shortly gave birth to LED, light emitting diode therapy. If you just kind of imagine neoprene pads with rounded light diodes, that and you can wrap these pads around larger areas of the body. So that kind of made up for what lasers couldn't do. But then there's one other way to use these light tools, which is doing acupuncture with light instead of needles. So with the right charts, knowing where the points are, you actually can do what's called photopuncture. Mm. And we all know how powerful acupuncture is. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line is technology has kind of blended with ancient traditional Chinese medicine, if you will, using light on acupuncture points. And through this light therapy, you can also use light on the brain, on the skull. And there's almost 5,000 studies from NASA was huge in this, proving how successful light LED therapy is for traumatic brain injury, for all kinds of, you know, pain and, you know, human health issues. So you can use that on animals and you can use it on humans. And that kind of brought me to the next step.
And to me, it's fascinating because the modalities that are out there for healing are they're innumerable. Like they just are. It's just incredible what we have found over the centuries. You know, I mean, and what is also very interesting to me is the fact that there are some modalities for healing that we're actually going back to that are in many cases ancient. I know that, although it may not seem like it seems counterintuitive to go back to using leeches, but there are some people who are actually using leeches,
right,
in certain healing processes.
Well, the thing that I love the most about this light tool thing is that it's, you know, I'm a big believer in practitioners, but I'm also a very big believer in doing for yourself, in owning your own healing processes. And whether you buy a red light torch and follow some easy to follow charts, you just hold, you know, look at the chart, hold the little torch to that spot in your body, wait a minute or so, and then move on to the next one. So what the reason I got involved in this to begin with is that all these tools are obtainable by anyone who wants to buy them. They are considered class 2 medical devices, which means they are FDA cleared for at home use.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, I mean, you can pull out a little red light torch, and my girlfriend's so funny. She sits next to someone on a plane in pain. Boop, she pulls out the torch. And people are just blown away. She just never stops working. But, you know, you can apply it to a wound and watch how fast the wound heals. And you can also apply it to acupuncture points. And, you know, for, you know, when you buy the torch, for example, it comes with a living pain-free book. So you name it, all kinds of emotional things, physical things that acupuncture is used for, you now can do on your own with a little torch. Or, you know, for people that have chronic pain or, you know, bigger issues, the LED light therapy is amazing. I mean, the people that I know that have had skiing accidents, that have had traumatic brain injuries, for example, from car accidents, motorcycle accidents, and they regain their life by putting a light cap on and pressing a button.
Yeah. It's incredible. Yeah. It really is. It's mm-hmm. Now, I've had acupuncture. I also had a gentleman who, in administering the acupuncture, also used what's called cupping.
Yeah,
which is very interesting. Hard to do on dogs and cats because of the fur, but there's also obviously I myself, my wife and I are both Reiki masters. We went through that process, the three levels, and so there's that that modality as well. It's just astounding what, as I said before, what is available for us out there, and you're using that. I want to shift back a little bit because this just kind of came to mind. In terms of animals instinctively or intuitively, probably more so intuitive than instinctive. Yeah. I mean, you made the comment earlier about how they know weeks in advance what's coming weather-wise and what to do and you know where to go and so forth. What sense, if you're able to tap in, or maybe you, I don't know if you are, you tap in or you get bombarded by, but I'm curious as to any kinds of, and not, it doesn't have to be specific messages, but just in general, any kinds of messages that the animal kingdom gives to you or shares with you at these times when we have these different kinds of natural disasters, but more specifically, when the humans are in the process of doing everything they can to get these animals out of harm's way. We have a place here in Santa Barbara. It's called Earl Warren Showground. And it has been designated as a livestock sanctuary, shall we say, for animals. People can bring their horses, their not their cattle, of course, but, you know, their various large animals to that facility during the height of whatever disasters is unfolding. Do you ever pick up on any kinds of messages, whether it's of, you know, if you would just let me run, I'd be fine, or thank you, lots of gratitude, or, I mean, what kind of messages, if any, have you been able to pick up on?
Well, it all depends on where and when and if you
okay.
ask.
Okay.
And so what has happened with my communications with the animals is as follows. From the beginning, yes, in certain cases, animals that are in situations of extreme hardship, you know, factory farms, they did come through. And this would be a similar situation. Animals that are suffering at the hand of humans. Now, when animals, it's twofold. Number one, they really believe in the purpose for everything. I mean, they don't fight against what is. If the way humans do. They don't try to control life. But at the same time, I mean, do you think they're going to be upset if they're rescued, or would they prefer to burn alive? You know, kind of silly. But what goes with this is there are many, many people revealing the damage that we humans have caused to animals, the planet, each other. what they wanted me to share, because there are many touch points of change, is a higher way of being that they choose amongst themselves. Again, you know, disclaimer, every soul is different. You know, some are more advanced than others. There is so much to animal consciousness and wisdom that we have no idea of. And we love to think of ourselves as the hero. We saved this animal. We saved this animal. And what we're missing is they are just standing there quietly by example, showing us such breathtaking lessons, whether it's mindfulness and being in the moment, going with the flow, you know, because animals don't control their own destiny the way we do. So as a horse told me, it's their lives are a crash course in acceptance and flexibility. Think about it. Even an animal that just flies or runs to get out of your way, they are constantly adapting to humans. And changes in circumstances. They get picked up, they get sold, they get separated from their families, they get abandoned. I mean, really. And so to watch them survive us, again, their response is a level, is a function of their soul evolution, because you see some animals that don't get over the damage, and others like my dog, Mr. T, who was dumped and found on the side of the road, completely unrecognizable as a dog. And he is the most well-adjusted being I've ever met on any number of legs. No matter where you put him, he instantly adapts to the circumstance, whether he's catching flies at the barn, you know, finding food at a store, you know, was terrified of the ocean, but within a matter of 2 weeks, just watch the other dogs and goes, I'm done, throws himself into the ocean, starts outrunning the waves. He adapts to everything. I took him on a couple of TV interviews. He fell asleep on the news desk. It's kind of funny. The film is on my website. They're like, yeah, Mr. T, you need to really calm down. But the point is that what's happening right now, and I now have a new website called Animals Talk to Us. Yeah, we all know they talk to us, but it's starting to get much more interesting because we are waking up. We are starting to use our intuitive skills and say, gee, I just know. I don't know where I know. All of a sudden, I just know that that dog needs this or that something's going to happen tomorrow. So this worldwide wake up that's happening in pockets everywhere includes our reclaiming our intuitive skills, including our ability to connect with all life and understand all life. So people are writing to me from, you name the country, it is so cool, sharing like, oh, you know, things that they squashed, things they heard or saw or felt from their animals. And now they're starting to realize that we have these gifts, they're innate, but our society never encourages them.
Yeah. Now, you're on the East Coast.
I am indeed.
You're in Florida.
Yes.
You're at the epicenter of Hurricane Alley. I mean, they might pass by you to the south, but you never know. What do the animals that you've been able to observe do when these monsters? I would assume they are aware days, if not weeks prior, so they get the hell out of the way. Because there really isn't any place to go to hunker down because you've got the winds, you've got the water that could flood wherever it is that they're going. Or do they just stay and say, hey, you know, it is what it is and, you know, I'll either survive or I won't. I mean, that's got to be, I mean, it's just unbelievable. I can't.
Animals don't worry about what's going to happen tomorrow. When we had the last hurricane, we have a thing called Lion Country Safari, which is a cageless, if you will, zoo. And interestingly enough, I did tap into some of the animals there, and they take their role as ambassadors very seriously. They love when people come because people don't see wild animals, and at least they're not in cages. I mean, I'm not going to go on and on about, you know.
Right.
Right.
No, I hear you. I hear
you. But you know what? They just said, what do? We leave the animals alone because they know what to do. And you know what? Every single one of them was fine. They let the weather roll over them. They hunkered down. You know, when Mother Earth is cleaning herself, if you will, through drought.
Mm-hmm.
The animals get, like a hare told me, they get nauseated and they don't eat. She is we, and she is we. They see these patterns as part of the flow of life. They don't fight and freak out. They deal with it when it comes up. They don't go, oh, I feel it coming. Oh my God, I'm getting, yes, you can see horses react because they're highly sensitive.
Sure.
But they don't jump out of their skin the way we do.
Yeah. So they are as connected to Mother Earth as we should be connected to them.
Okay, that's an interesting way to put it.
You know, it just seems to me that they are. I mean, they are their awareness, as you say. And this was actually brought to my attention not too long ago. I've only owned truly two dogs in my life. My first dog, Alfie, lost him in a divorce, and then I heard a few years later they actually had to put him down because he was nipping at people. Gee, I wonder why. Anyway, and then, of course, the second one was Makushla. And one of the things that was so fascinating, and this is going back to Alfie, whenever I would leave for work, and I was bicycling to work at the time, if I had forgotten something, I went out the gate with my bicycle, and then I would lock it or close it, and then I forgot something. I'd open the gate. He would greet me as if I was coming home in the afternoon from work. And someone told me, says, well, but animals, and dogs in this case, they have no concept of time. You could have been gone for 10 years or 10 seconds, and it's the same to him. And so I found that so fascinating. And so,
there are so, forgive this expression, I think humans overcomplicate everything.
Ah.
We try to dissect everything.
True, true, true.
That dog lives for you. Who are we kidding?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That dog, I mean, I could go out, bring out the trash, and come back and my dog's ecstatic to see me.
Yeah.
It's not that he has, I mean, again, part of me doesn't even want to try to prove it. Does a dog understand time? You know, I have more fun, reading studies from 1999 from Rupert Sheldrake, dogs who know when their owners are coming home, and had hidden cameras planted no matter when that person came home, no matter how erratic their schedule, you know, X percent, 60% of the dogs were lined up at the door, you know, a half an hour before that human came home, because they tap into your energy field.
It's
they
the
use their sixth sense along with their five senses.
The connection. It's the connection, not the clock. Nor lack thereof.
And you know what? It does require slowing down to build those abilities in ourselves, you know, tuning in, listening to hunches and our guts. And, you know, that was the reason for this next series of books, because children have a lot less derailing information if they're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 than we do. And they already have this wisdom inside, again, that hasn't been encouraged to come out. So I wrote this trilogy because it was Mr. T's idea, you know, and I kept saying, what happened to you? What happened to you? You were found on the side of the road. And his response was, I could tell you my story, but I don't dwell on hardship. I would rather focus on children and having them understand how powerful they are.
Yeah.
And that they can communicate with us. And I think you should ask the other animals what they want to contribute.
Yeah.
So I got all that stuff and sat on it for 2 years because I can't write a made up story. And then, you know, turned it into rhymes. And Mr. T takes the kids on a journey through each book, first the neighborhood, then down at the farm, then out in the great wide world, where the animals reveal their secret animal wisdom ways. So in other words, the kids learn how to be more like the animals. And in so doing, they're tapping into their own abilities to communicate with them.
And these animal wisdom ways come from the messages that you have received from the animals over the years in the work that you have done.
Exactly. But I had to make it kid friendly.
I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're learning how to ground their energy, and they're learning how to feel peace, and they're learning to get outside and lie on the ground, you know, and being kind makes you powerful. You know, you got to deal with the bullying thing, but the animals just are trying to get the kids off, you know, off their devices,
mm-hmm.
to watch and use and listen to the signals from their own bodies, which is huge.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that's they get to hopefully experience what it's like to be a kid again.
We're talking with Sandra Mendelsohn, and we're talking about communicating with our animal friends, be they pets, animals in the neighborhood, heck, even out in nature. I have been extremely fortunate to have had the experiences that I've had since moving to Santa Barbara, being in the presence of a brown bear a couple of times, and I've shared that experience on this program before, having a flock of wild turkeys, and I'm talking a dozen, two dozen turkeys that would roam the property where we live, and the experiences that we had with them. We, of course, had chickens, up to 40-some-odd chickens at that time. By the way, the phrase, I find this fascinating, and not to get into this subject per se, but I hear the advertisements, for example, for different restaurants, and they say, and we use cage-free eggs. And I'm going, no, you don't. You do not use cage-free eggs. You use eggs that were laid by cage-free hens. I mean, you know, but that's semantics on my part. But the experiences I've had with the various animals, and I've been out in the channel, whale watching, and dolphins are swimming with the boats that are out there, and they're all very careful as the boats are very careful as they go through the waters to make sure that nobody gets hit. But it's just remarkable what one can experience if you just stop, open your eyes, open your ears, and listen with your entire being. I love to use the term. I use it a lot. To grok it, to assimilate all of that into every cell of your being. We're going to assimilate even more with Sandra here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. This program is in honor of my Makushla, who have passed on October 12th of 2018. SMendelsohn.com. That's smendelsohn.com. I know you have another website as well. Is it linked through this website, or do we need to give out a separate one?
Well, it's called animalstalktous.com, and there's certain things on it that will that are unique, but then also if you click, it will bring you to the main site. You know, people need tools, so there's an interview and hopefully some interesting stuff on there.
AnimalsTalkToUs.com, that is the website. Oh, what I love these photographs that you have scrolling through. We're going to talk more with Sandra here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I ask you to stay with us.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Hey, thanks for staying with us. This is a fascinating program. I always like talking about the animal kingdom and what it has to offer to all of us. We all need to learn how to connect with nature at some level. I mean, heck, I grew up in urban Phoenix, and that was certainly not quite the experience that I'm getting now, but. By the same token, Sandra Mendelsohn, it's been very interesting to experience it now and to share it with other people as well. I mean, I think that's the other aspect of it too. Is it's sometimes it's not enough just to have those experiences. You want to share them. You want to get other people involved because then maybe that might spark something in them. And they can have similar experiences. I mean, you know, you come up on a brown bear that's twice, three times your size, and you think, oh, I better run. Well, that's the last thing you want to do. You want to stand still and stay calm. You don't need to be fearful of this creature. And I wasn't. I mean, again, it was just one of the most extraordinary experiences that I can ever remember. We had deer. We have a family of deer. I haven't seen the buck in a long, long time. What a magnificent set of antlers that this buck has when I did see him. But the mama has been pregnant several times over the last 4 or 5 years, and she's brought the children, and it's just and she responds to my wife's voice, which is also remarkable. And that's another thing, too, that if we take a different attitude, question for you, if we take a different attitude, animals that you might think are, you know, we've been told, as you say, humans tend to complicate, they're not going to hurt you. They just want to coexist.
Coexisting, asking them to leave, explaining if you're going to lift a bug and bring it outside, which I do. I'm like, just you made a wrong turn. It was so funny because, you know, I've gotten so much that I haven't even published from a gecko that continued just like to plant himself right outside my desk window. And I'm busy. I'm at my computer and I look up and there he is sitting on my desk because he figured out a way to get through the sliding glass doors. They all do. They're so fascinated by us. He's just like, we are so curious about you humans. And I'm like, okay, it's fine if you stay for a little while, but there's no food here and I don't want you to die. And they don't understand why I get, you know, I was getting upset, which I've since I've graduated beyond that, because they don't live in fear.
Yeah. It's not part of their makeup. And the other thing that I've observed, and correct me if I'm wrong, I may have mentioned this in our last interview. When we watch, for example, these animal programs, these National Geographic kinds of programs where they're out in the Serengeti and they're watching this jaguar chasing this gazelle or whatever the chase is and whatever the participants are, whoever they are, they talk about, you know, the predator and the prey. And oh, my goodness, how, and of course, a lot of people are, oh, my God, how can you show that? And this is terrible. And it's like, and the first thought that came to my mind was, wait a minute. They don't see it that way. They see this as, this is just life. This is just what is.
Well, here's the one thing that I've heard from numerous species. The one quote, animals have an elaborate system of alerts and warnings. So it's not like they get pounced on and they're taken by surprise. The ones that are caught have their life force already on the wing. They animals, yes, when a lion is hunting, you know, when they are hunting prey, they pick the ones that are a little infirm, that, you know, they can feel, even if you can't as a human see it with the naked eye, they can feel that that animal would have gotten sick, that animal is weak, you know, not made for the long haul. Those are the ones that get caught. And I've had zebras tell me that, I've had lions tell me that, I've had, you know, both predator and prey tell me the same story, which is fascinating.
Wow. And yet we look at that and just, oh, we're horrified. I've seen some of these programs and, you know, I think about, for example, even in the ocean, I mean, I live right here on the Central Coast and you know, it's the tiny little microbes that get eaten by the tiny little fish that get eaten by the bigger fish that get eaten by a bigger fish and so on and so forth and so forth. It's like, you know, it's, you know, if I may quote the line from the lyrics of a song, it's the circle of life.
Well, you know what else the animals say, which also, you know, think about it. I've seen squirrels eating birds. I've seen birds eating baby squirrels. How do you like that one?
Oh,
you know, like right dead. They're okay. Whether they're already dead, they were roadkill. But the point is the animals have told me that it is the needs of the body are considered just that and are no reflection of the consciousness within. So, you know, again, you could get into a whole argument about vegan, vegetarian, or eating. You know, I never comment on how we humans eat because it has gotten so darn complicated. And all the animals want that they've said to me is, please stop creating divisions between you. So there are magnificent people that save animals that eat animals. And there are magnificent people that are staunch vegans, but don't be militant and attack each other, whatever your position is, because your own body is changing. And I've had many people that say I was vegan and then for a while I had a change, or for, you know, once every 6 months I need, because I was sick, because my hair was falling out. You know, there are so many perspectives on this very touchy issue. So please live and let live.
Yeah.
That is, you know, the animals, and people say, well, how do animals feel about being eaten? And again, I've heard the same perspective from chickens, from lambs, it doesn't, from cows. Animals never had an issue of giving their life to a family or a community that was grateful and allowed that animal to live its existence with its feet on the earth, usually with a family nearby, but feet on the earth in part of the cycle. Thank you. The cycle of life and cycle of nature It's when we remove them from that, and I'm not going into it, what we do, which is concentration camp behavior, and it's absolutely untenable.
Yeah.
No being on the planet deserves that. Thank you, State of California, for, what was it, Prop, was it 18?
Something like that, yeah.
It was just voted in to create, you know, it'll take a while, but to create better conditions for farm animals, would stop some of this torture, you know, so you have to be grateful for every little win.
Absolutely.
And create better conditions.
And not to go down that too far, but I do want to say that, you know, when I'm going to sort of tie this in, that when you have a cook in the kitchen cooking, and I've actually proposed this as a test. I'd love to see somebody do this as a test. And you have somebody go into a kitchen and they go and they cook a dish, a meal, whatever it might be. And everybody just goes gaga over it. Oh my God, it's incredible, you know. And can I get the recipe? And they take the recipe home and they go make it. And it's nothing like what they had when they were at this person's home. And I can attest to this fact because my grandmother used to make tamales when we would go visit her out in Florence, Arizona. We'd go 2 weeks every summer. My parents shipped two of us off to get rid of us for a while. And, you know, it was a wonderful experience. And her tamales, just unbelievable. Would eat them out of the refrigerator cold. It didn't matter. They were so good. And I've been looking for that same tamale, and I've come very close. And then I was reminded, you're never going to find it because they're not going to infuse it with the same love that your grandmother
there
did.
There you go. Okay? Just like that movie, like Water for Chocolate. That is such a perfect thing. The love.
Yeah.
Passion. And by the same token, you can go to a restaurant and get stomach upset because someone was fighting in the kitchen. And there's no way for you to know that. But that, again, that's a whole nother story where people, if they put love into their food and they really enjoy cooking, they will create a meal at home that you cannot duplicate anywhere else. It's the power of energy.
And so wouldn't the same principle apply if we're going to consume members of the animal kingdom, to treat them with respect? For example, I've seen hunting programs where they're on the hunt, and they find their the shot they're going to take, and they take it. And I've watched time and time again, and I was astounded, quite honestly. Not everybody does this, but on these programs they did, especially if they have had a young person there who was just learning. They sat next to this animal they had just shot, or shot with an arrow or what have you, they had just downed, and they talked to it, and they thanked it for, and I mean, they went through this whole almost ritualistic gratitude, moment of gratitude and thanks for helping to feed their family and so forth. But when you...
Just like the Native Americans.
Exactly. But if you have, I'm going to use your term, okay, but if you have concentration camp type conditions, where is that?
There you go. What you are eating them, you are eating their energy.
Yeah.
What has been done to them, you are now ingesting, right, from the drugs and the trauma and the, you know. So again, you know, for people that don't know how to navigate this, it's really makes it easy if, for example, you try eating vegetarian when you're out, so that if you're going to eat at home, you can find humanely raised, local, you know, you got to do your research.
Right.
There's a lot of misnomer labels out there. Cage-free eggs, that is, when you see the conditions of the chickens, it's deplorable.
Yeah.
You know, cage-free, you know, basically means, or free-range, you know, Dr. Oz said this years ago, means that they held the door open for 1 second and closed it. Okay, we have now shown the chickens. That's considered free-range. And they're on top of one another.
Yeah.
You know, and so again, much longer conversation about sourcing truly ethically treated animals for consumption. It does exist. It absolutely
Well, I've also heard it too. Heard it also that, especially, and this was speaking specifically of cattle, but I know this is across the board, animal kingdom wise. that if an animal is in fear, a certain chemical is released into the bloodstream. It's virtually a toxin to us. And then what happens? That blood gets into the tissue before the animal is dispatched. And guess what? We consume that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would actually say, too, that you really want to do the same thing, even with your plants. There was a scientist in India back in the, I think it was the 20s, 1920s, that created this device called a crescograph that was able to measure what's called the turgor pressure. It's equivalent to the blood pressure in humans of plants. And he actually applied certain stimuli to plants, and it showed their reaction to these different stimuli, whether it was chloroform, whether it was cutting, a leaf off or what have you. It showed a reaction. And so I sat here when I first read that, and this is going back to when I was 17, and I read that, and I thought about all these vegetarians who don't like eating animal products and so forth because of all this other stuff. I'm thinking, well, now you have a bigger problem, because this proves that these are, at least at some level, somewhat sentient, or at least they're aware of what's happening.
Yeah.
So now what are you gonna? Now what are you gonna eat?
I know it's so difficult, because 6 years ago, the very first course that really blew my mind said, "We hear the birds speak, the plants speak, everything speaks." Mm-hmm. And then in the next 6 years that followed, the secret life of trees, and how they keep each other alive, and how sentient they are, and how sensitive they keep each other alive with sugar solution through their roots, even when one has been cut down to a stump. And there's much more to that. So yes, every food source we have is sentient, and you can't live on rocks. So it's really tricky for people to make peace with the need to survive by consuming food.
Yeah. It's not, and quite honestly, as we've, I think, well elucidated, it's not just the consuming, it's in the way in which we consume. If we would transform the way in which we do it, and again, as you say, California, okay, we've taken a good first step. If we would just change that, it doesn't take much. It really, really doesn't. And even if you're milking a cow, talk to the animal. But what do? They hook them up to a machine and they milk them. So there's no conversation going on.
That's what happened with population, explosion. And we went bigger and faster. And that's when we lost our connection to everything. Yeah.
My wife and I love to sit out in our chicken run. I put a bench in there. And we sit there with the five girls that we have now. And so they will jump up on our knee. We'll hold them. My wife will cuddle them. We've even had them. Fortunately, I was wearing a cap at the time. But I had one who jumped up on my head. She's had that happen as well. They are just the most fascinating creatures to be able to physically come in contact with, because ostensibly they are wild. I mean, in a manner of speaking, someone would say, well, they're domesticated. Yeah, but they do their own thing. And if they don't want to be picked up and you have to chase them, that's not domestic. They don't want to be picked up. But I always thank them and at least pet one of them on the head or stroke their back when I'm collecting the eggs. I say, hey, thanks very much. I really appreciate it. Because we had a couple of hens who, when I would go in to collect the eggs, I would have to reach under them because they were brooding, and they've stopped doing that. But
Have you heard of Little Miss Sunshine? Miss Sunshine is a chicken in Australia who's become a TV star, demonstrating the incredible intelligence of chickens. And they show how they can find hidden objects, and they do this, and they do, Little Miss Sunshine jumped up like, come on up here, jumps up like a dog. So once you really start, I can't stand when they're like, well, a pig has the intelligence, is smarter than a 4-year-old child. Stop anthropomorphizing everything and just be blown away by the pig's intelligence or by the dolphin's intelligence. I mean, so all, what the animals have said, I heard it from a horse, most animals show you their vanilla exterior when tutti frutti lies beneath. Our sense of humor, our compassion, our problem-solving abilities, and yes, that intelligence you humans prize so highly. You will see the full extent of it only when you first see us differently. Until then, you will only see through the slats a partial image of our souls.
Mm.
So I thought that was so fascinating, that the more we engage and look across at them and share reality in real time, just sit with them, be with them, look out of your eyes the way they look out through theirs, the more they're going to show you. Like there's a video on Facebook, this chicken that runs to the bus when the kids come home to meet his or her, I don't know if it's male or female, his kid.
I love it.
I mean, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That chicken's allowed to run. And where did it run? It ran to the bus to greet the kids.
And
I just love that.
And it didn't try to cross the road. It stayed and waited for the bus, you know? Oh, it is truly fascinating. And we have put up several birdhouses in the front of the house. And my wife, every morning when we head out for work, we bought a bag of peanuts, and she grabs a handful, and she places that out on what is the equivalent of the porch of one of the greenhouses, and in swoop the blue jays to pick up these peanuts and go off and do with them whatever. We even have a crow. He's a large crow. He's wild. We've named him Warren, and we'll see him up on the phone wire up above. Or up in the apple tree adjacent to this one birdhouse with the porch. And he'll grab a peanut every once in a while, too.
It's really funny how they started to balance out the score, because the squirrels used to steal all the bird food. And now the birds are stealing the squirrel food, which I love. I think it's so great. But, you know, then the rabbits eat anything. And, you know, they should be eating just hay and grass. And the next thing I turn around and they're eating bird feed. So I just live in, you know, they look fine. There's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
They're
now,
all opportunistic.
And I've heard all of the laws and the rules about feeding the wild animals in your area. And at the same time, you know, they feel safe where they are on the place where we live. They feel safe. Now, whether they stay there or not, I don't know. All I know is that they show up every so often, like the deer. They're not there every day, but maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks, you know, and then after 3 or 4 weeks, we kind of wonder if they're still around. Did they get taken down by predator or what have you?
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden they show up. It's like, wow, okay, fantastic. You're still here.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Humans are fearful of everything.
Yeah.
Oh, if you feed them every day, they won't, and you know, they won't be able to survive in the wild. Who are you kidding? They've been surviving in the wild forever.
Mm-hmm.
If all of a sudden their food source dries up, they know how to find food elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are some people that say, don't feed them by hand. Don't do that. You know, yes, I do agree with respect that they are wild, you know, and their space. But you know what? As Siegel told me, you know, to bridge the gap, a little gift of food says we don't have to come and swipe it from your dinner table. You know, it's an invitation.
Exactly. Exactly.
So don't deprive yourself of this, but don't feed them junk. Because you know what? There are videos of squirrels eating glazed donuts. And as they told me, those videos got them in a lot of trouble, because if they're hungry, they'll eat it, but then they get sick afterwards.
Yeah.
So, you know, fruits, vegetables, nuts, and seeds, man. Yeah. That's the extent of it if you're going to, you know, feed.
Yeah. And even when we give our chickens scraps, we're always Googling, okay, is this okay for chickens to eat? You know, sweet potato peelings. Okay, no problem, et cetera, et cetera.
Good.
And we'll even, I kid you not, we will go to the store. We will buy one of those plastic boxes of greens. That plastic box of greens is exclusively for the girls.
I mean, love it. And then you know what? You probably have really healthy, gorgeous chickens.
And terrific eggs. Let me tell you. Delicious.
With hard shells, right?
Oh,
with
yes. Oh, yeah. And we'll get moisture shell as well mixed in with their feed.
Wow.
Or actually sprinkling on the ground. But, I mean, it's extraordinary. And, again, I grew up in Phoenix. We didn't really have pets in my home. I mean, yes, we had an occasional cat, a hamster. I think my sister had a parakeet. We did have a dog, but it was very short-lived, only because it was a stray and we were waiting for the Humane Society or whatever agency it was that was going to pick them up. But didn't really have that experience in the same way that I do now. And it's just extraordinary that I am not overly programmed, thank God, that I can really appreciate the incredible gift that they are in my life, as well as to the community, and what lessons they have. I guess the other part of it, too, is, you know, and again, we as humans, as you said, we do tend to complicate the whole thing. But one of the things that I love, and I always try to research this a little every time this happens, is when a certain animal crosses my path. Now, when I've met with all the animals I've already mentioned, you know, it's like, well, gee, how many other animals could you have cross your path that could have some kind of a hidden meaning or message? I had a fox race across the highway that leads up to our home. And he was far enough away where I wasn't in danger of hitting him, but he raced across. And I'm like, wow, what message is that for me? And so I then try to research that. Is that going too far as trying to figure out, okay, what does that mean in my life? That bird just passed across my path.
Right.
That means this, that. Is that, are the animals even aware that we're doing that? And are they saying, are you kidding me? Means nothing. Well, we're just trying to get from point A to point B.
Well, here's the thing, discernment. You know, what is it, Ted Andrews? I mean, there's all these wonderful animal symbol books and animal totem books.
Yeah.
And there are people that say, when it is just so, not intrusive, but so, here's a perfect example. The night before, I went on an absolutely game-changing retreat where I went to British Columbia, where the horses are actually higher beings, and the woman that runs the place has been channeling books from her from them for years, and this wild herd they're not wild, you know, they kept them together, and what they had to say resonated so deeply within me that I saved for 4 years to go there. The night before I went, on my doorstep was a snake just hanging there, and I said, well, that's unusual, and I looked it up, and it's all about transformation. And what then happened on that trip cracked open my whole, you know, I really started to believe what I was getting, and I stepped fully into this work, if you will. So that was very significant. You know, when they show up three times, you know, for example, or people will say, okay, you know, the crow flew over and then this, and then I saw a crow on my computer and did it, like it was just crow, 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 crow. That's crow energy coming through to you. And it's great to have one of those animal symbol books, but it doesn't mean every single time you see an animal. I mean, I'm surrounded by geckos and butterflies. Does that always mean they're trying to get through to me? They live side by side with us. So I think, you know, we're learning discernment just the way we're also learning to tap into our own intuition. You know, we're waking up in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And thank God we are. I mean, not all of us are. There are a few out there that just don't seem to get it. But they will. They will eventually get it.
Each in his or her own time. You know, like the animals have said to me, don't automatically write off people around you as not being able to understand, because there are pockets of awakening even in the most unlikely of personalities. Mm. So meet them where they are conversationally, but just kind of stay in your heart, and then you'll start to see the beauty in them or the common ground that you share. So if you just like hit them with all kind of woo stuff, they're going to recoil, you know, because it's too much.
You know, you also mentioned, too, about the whole aspect of the, and I'm going to use this term just for clarity, the predator-prey thing. You've got different creatures eating one another back and forth across the line. But you also have some of the most incredible videos and pictures, as well as experiences, of diverse species laying together. I mean, it's like...
It's intentional.
It's incredible.
It is intentional. I posted this years ago, and we now have, I just reposted a compilation video that someone showed of the, you know, a lion and a bear. I mean, the most incredible friendships. What was the one I just saw recently? An emu and a donkey, I think, that are madly in love with one another and cannot be separated. And that, what a blue jay said to me is, notice unlikely animal partnerships. These are intentional. We are trying to show humans through our actions that choice overrides instinct, no matter how long that instinct has been there. And you can choose to love and care for anyone, If you know, and people like to say, well, it was because the animal was gestating. No, it was a male lion taking care of a baby deer. Do the math.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the animal kingdom is trying to get through to us in ways we can understand. They're emulating our behaviors. That's why people always used to talk about Coco, the gorilla, because she learned our way to sign. But now we're starting to learn everyone's way, which is listening to the intuition, you know, get to trusting those gut feelings and closing your eyes and maybe seeing images and not immediately discarding them, because you have your own skill sets if you just take the time to discover what they are.
Yeah. And that's really the key right there, is taking the time, and I'm hoping people will start to do that. I really do. I really hope that people will begin that wonderful journey, because it is. As I said, I've been so blessed. You know, I did not expect, nor, and you know, or even quite honestly, anticipate having the kinds of experiences that I have had here in the Santa Barbara area, living here. Doing the things that that I'm doing now. I mean, it's just like, really? Okay. You know?
See, life is full of some really wild experiences, and you got to hang on during the not knowing why and the hazy parts, yeah. You know, or the parts where you may be really blue, because you'll never get to the good stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody had told me I would leave corporate and be doing this, I would tell them they're out of their mind.
Yeah.
But given enough time, sometimes the universe has major wonderful surprises in store.
I have to tell you that one of the animals that I love, absolutely love watching, and especially love watching them run, are horses. Oh my God, it's just, I mean, it's the power in their movements and their forward motion. It's the movement of the muscle and all of that that it's, and I have to tell you that my dog Angus, he's about the size of a horse. And I have to say that when I look at him, when he's running, chasing a tennis ball, I kind of see the same thing in him, that horse-like quality in the run. Mm-hmm. It's just magnificent. I hope I never get over that. It's just incredible.
Well, you won't, because there is so much more going on. Horses have told me, and that's why my book begins and ends with horses, and they guided this whole wake-up for me. Horses will energetically support anyone who wants to move themselves and the planet forward. And this is like, yet we could have another talk about what it's like when it's on my website as a blog post, what it's like when a horse energetically clears you. Horses, dolphins, whales, elephants, these four species are doing work way beyond this planet and this dimension. And I've gotten stuff that I haven't published yet, because, you know, you got to work, I got to grow into it, and other people have to embrace it through time. The energetic work that those four species are doing is so mind-blowing. But of all the four, horses, look at what, you know, the other are really wild. But horses have partnered with humans in our awakening, which is why so many people are publishing books about what they're getting from the horses, how they're listening to the horses. It's just, they are magnificent in the deepest way possible. They are also so big, but so exquisitely sensitive. So that's why they're being used in so much therapeutic work. I actually am a huge supporter of a not-for-profit near me called Hopes, Dreams, and Horses, where this horse was stuck in Hurricane Irma and ultimately lost his hoof. But in the middle of this whole thing was doing therapy work with children and veterans. And now he is coming home, I think, next week with a prosthetic leg, because that was made by the people that did the dolphin prosthetic tail. If you ever saw Dolphin's Tail, the movie, that was actually based on a true story. Mm. So this horse, instead of shoot them, this horse loved working with the children. And he is about, you know, acknowledging each soul on its path. This horse can get up on three legs from a lying down position. I've never seen anything like it. So he is now working with the veterans and children that have prostheses, because no one can understand that experience unless they have one for themselves.
We Walk Beside You, title of the book, sandramendelson.com, as well as I think another great website that you should absolutely check out, and that has to do with talking with the animals, and it is animalstalktous.com, animalstalktous.com, and I think that's the website we will link to this time so people can follow you and find out more and look at some incredible images as well and learn more about their animals, connect with you, maybe find out more about their own specific pets. Or animals that are in their lives, and, you know, enrich your life, folks. I mean, that's really what it's about. Enrich your life by bringing these wonderful, wonderful animals, these wonderful creatures, these souls, these, you know, entities, if you will. You don't have to touch them and pet them and feed them. You can just admire them from afar and just take it in. It's just absorb it. Grok it, folks. Just grok it. And if you don't know what that means, then read Stranger in a Strange Land. Sandra, I want to thank you so much. This has been, as always, has been an extraordinary journey for us. And I'm very grateful for the fact that you've shared this this time with us, this so much of this time. And hopefully we can get together again soon later in 2019 to talk further about these books, though, this plethora of books that's coming out. You're going to need your own bookshelf just to house them all the way it's going, because there's so much information that's available to us. I would assume that, well, I should not assume this, that it is possible for us as individuals to connect with the animals.
I mean, I'm here to serve a particular function. So that's why I am what's called clairaudience. So I hear all these things in words that can be shared with others. But the experience of, you know, I keep telling people there, I do have a blog post on my website, how to connect with animals. It's a picture of a cat. And the steps to take to start getting out of your monkey mind. Take a notebook, sit in nature, write down what you get. You will start to see patterns about your own gifts. I mean, there are people that can pull an object and start getting stories, but how would you know if you expected you're going to have this running Dr. Doolittle conversation? You're kind of, you know, short sheeting your own bet. You have to allow your own interpretive skills to show themselves. So closing your eyes, writing down what you here in your head, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful awakening process, and everybody can do this.
Yeah. And what great lessons they can teach us. What great lessons. I still chuckle at the experience with the brown bear when I was up the hill with my wife and we were watching it, and he looked up over the bushes while he was eating the plums off the tree. And he just looked at the two of us, and this was the second time in less than 10 minutes that I had seen him. And he just looked at us with, you know, and just said, "Yeah." And he walked around the bushes, walked across the dirt road on the property, walked out to the main road, and went down the road to basically say, "Look, I was trying to eat in privacy, and you've ruined it, so I'm out of here." it was magnificent. But anyway, Sandra, thank you so much for joining us. And for those who haven't listened to the previous interview, I'm going to ask you the three questions I asked you at the end of the last program. Again, we've sort of talked about, we've talked about so much. But first of all, who is Sandra Mendelson?
Oh, my goodness. That is a very interesting question. Who? Aren't we all just presents? But that's an Eckhart Tolle conversation. I guess the role that I'm performing is you know, animal communicator, animal channel, author, and life therapist. So how's that?
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I would like this work, as the animals have intended, to inspire others to trust their own intuition to spend more time looking out through their eyes at the natural world without being a prisoner of their minds, so that they they realize how much joy and how much power we actually have. And so two things happen, really. Yes, a respect for the animal world happens when we really observe what they're doing and what they're showing us. And at the same time, this discovering of our own intuitive gifts and the whole world of our sixth sense. So that is what this work is really inclusive, hopefully to inspire people to trust what they get.
And again, you've probably answered this to some point, but what is your life's purpose?
Well, you know, I really think at the root of it, my life's purpose is to experience being in the moment, and really to learn and enjoy. If I listen to what the animals have said, that's really what this great earth school is about. It's about learning and enjoying. So that is my purpose, to get more into the joy, you know, stop being so serious. And everything that is meant to happen is happening, you know, connecting with others who are opening their eyes too. So learn, enjoy, and connect with others who are experiencing truth in a different way than what we were told, trusting what they get. I know that's a long-winded answer, but I don't think anybody's ever asked me the question.
Well, again, I thank you so much. And I know you're out there way over there on the East Coast. But should you ever find yourself way over here on the West Coast, love to have you in studio to talk further about all of this. And also, of course, we'll have you back later in 2019 to talk about the progression of this series of books that you're putting together.
I would love it. I thank you so much. It's always a blast talking with you.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal and Makushla.